So they say you need 5 years to see if the business is going to be successful. Imagine you're 3 or 4 years into your business. You're running the Buttermilk Cafe in the suburbs, and things seem to be going well. And then the pandemic hits, and you're serving food. So right when you were in your groove, you get that. And the question is, can you survive? Let's talk to Katie Kouvelis about that. That's her place. Hi, Katie. You're on WGN. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Did I describe sort of the wall you hit, or what was it like for you guys there in Geneva?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Actually, you know, we were, you know, really pumping, and we were in the process of doing our third store, and we couldn't open our third store because the pandemic hit. So it was really challenging.
How shut down were you? Because there were different times and different capacities. What happened to your restaurant?
So initially for the first shutdown, we could only do takeout, which was, you know, very challenging in itself. And we're a full service restaurant. And, you know, it was a big learning curve for us to do all that takeout. And it was a little slow in the beginning. I think people were a little hesitant. We didn't really know what was going on. But then it definitely started to pick up. So it got a little bit better, for sure.
And was there a certain, I don't know, I think people demonstrated some allegiance or loyalty. You know, you're not just a restaurant where I like to get food. You're a business I want to support. Did you get that sense at times as well?
Absolutely. Geneva is a great community, and they totally supported us throughout the whole entire thing.
So you're open now, or what's capacity like now?
We're not right now. We're at 50% capacity.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that Illinois will go to its bridge phase, which is like 4.5, and maybe we'll get a little bit more capacity.
Do they call that a bridge phase? Is that what you said?
I think that's what they're calling it—a bridge phase.
I talk about this every day. I have trouble keeping up with the language, the phases, the plans, the ins and outs. It must be a little
difficult. We do too.
Crazy for a restaurant like you. And by the way, you said full service restaurant. The business you do there at 7 West State Street, at least in the Geneva location, is called Buttermilk Cafe. That makes me think breakfast. What are you all serving?
Breakfast and lunch. And we have a full coffee bar, and we also have mimosas, Bloody Marys, some beer, and some wine.
You know, where I live in Lakeview in Chicago, it's like boozy brunch land.
Yeah, right. Oh, I have no doubt.
Is Geneva that way too?
Yes. Ladies love to get together and have their mimosas.
I think that's
and guys like bloodies.
Fair enough, but it just seems to me like the boozy brunch is a relatively new phenomenon, right? It's always been there, but it seems to be very popular these days.
I agree. Everybody is, you know, all about going out for breakfast and having cocktails.
And
especially people with families, it's just easier to go out for breakfast than it is at night. You know, you got to get babysitters, all that stuff.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And then you still have the rest of the day to take that nap. What's on the menu? What do I get when I go to your place?
We make homemade biscuits every single day. So we have several different types of biscuits. We have our honey biscuit, which is a drop biscuit. And then we have our buttermilk biscuit, which is used for biscuits and gravy and all of that, chicken and biscuits. And then we also have a stuffed biscuit. And the stuffed biscuit is a biscuit dough stuffed with sausage gravy, eggs, bacon, cheese, and then baked and topped with more sausage gravy.
Did I see that you had a kind of a Southwest or Mexican vibe there, too?
Yeah, we do. You know, I love Mexican food, so I try to tie it into the breakfast. We have like a red rooster skillet with sweet potatoes, homemade. We make our chorizo from scratch, jalapenos, avocado, and eggs, of course.
Okay.
It's quite delicious.
I'll tell you what, we've been talking a lot about Geneva on the radio today, and every one of you has made me want to, if not move there, at least eat there. So we're on our way
it's a great town to live in.
We're on our way. Katie Kouvelis is the owner of Buttermilk Cafe. The website is buttermilkrestaurants.com because, what, is the Vernon Hills up and running now?
Yes, we actually were able to open for takeout only 2 days before Mother's Day.
How about
last May.
Naperville, too. Let's visit again. Yep. Congratulations. Continued success, Katie.
Thank you so much.
Katie Kouvelis from Buttermilk Cafe. Ian Schur is an editor-at-large at CNET. Hi, Ian.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, but I don't understand. There's a problem with my TV guide. It says Elon Musk is going to host SNL.
You know, I couldn't believe it either. It's interesting because this guy, I mean, first off, you know, being one of the richest people in the world, he doesn't really have to do any of this stuff. But I think what's really fascinating is that he is not exactly the personality I would think of when it comes to being able to make fun of himself. If you've ever seen him on stage, and of course we have a lot of videos on CNET if you ever want to see that, he, you know, he mumbles and he fumbles and he's not very polished. So I'm curious how he'll do on SNL. There's historically a list of SNL people who are not allowed to return after they've bombed. So I wonder if he'll join that list.
I'm trying to think of some of the people that when Donald Trump was on there, the question was, how are they going to write the skits? Are they going to make the joke with him or on him? And I think that's the fine line that you have to wonder when you put somebody up who's not a traditional entertainer.
Yes, absolutely. And in that case, I mean, I think the one that stuck out to me was the one where he's tweeting angry stuff at everyone during the skit. And I think that, you know, that played into the character that he is. He didn't really have to do any acting. So, I you know, again, it's kind of, when it comes to Elon Musk, he's known for saying outlandish stuff, but mostly on Twitter. And in person, he's very quiet and contained. So I don't know how that'll play out in the end.
When is he going to be on? Is it this Saturday night?
No, it's May 8th.
Oh,
so you've
May
got
8th.
A little time to prepare yourself.
And he has some time to behave himself because...
Yes, well, good luck with that.
Talk to me about Amazon, this in-garage grocery delivery service. What's happening?
Yeah, you know, one of the things Amazon's been doing for quite a while is experimenting with this idea of not just delivering stuff to our doorstep, although that's very nice, but actually bringing it into our home. Because there are so many smart locks out there, or even, you know, cameras and whatnot, it creates the situation where they can actually connect to your smart lock and then unlock the door for the delivery person. They can just put it inside. There's a camera looking at the front door so they know that everyone's on the up and up, and then they leave. Well, now they're testing this with groceries. And by the way, this is not just a test. They already did a pilot program in Chicago, Dallas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Seattle. Now they're going to do it across the country. Same idea, deliver groceries either into your home or into your garage. And same, you know, if you have a smart garage opener, all the better. They'll even do it with the boxes. They'll even deliver to your trunk of your car. I don't know if they'll do the garage or they'll do that with groceries, but it's very clear they're trying to play with this stuff.
How does that square with people being very sensitive to invasion of my privacy, digital or physical?
You know, that is a very key question. One thing I've noticed is that, as I mentioned, there's a lot of usage of cameras. If you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, you may have noticed whenever they drop off a package with you and it's an Amazon person, they actually take a photo of the package on your stoop to kind of prove that they did leave it there and the condition it was left in. And I think that is something that Amazon has hit upon. And by the way, they're not alone. Walmart is doing a grocery delivery to your refrigerator. So they're going even a couple more steps into your home. And same idea, they actually have a camera attached to the person, kind of like a police body cam. And I think in all those cases, it's to make us feel a little more comfortable and make it as common as when we have someone in to repair our HVAC or to clean our house or whatever else. This will now become another part of that if we end up liking it.
My understanding is that Costco has gone one step further. Not only do they deliver it to your place and then put it in your refrigerator, they then cut your steak into little pieces so you don't even...
You know,
we get?
You know, look, the reality is, I don't think it's just lazy, although it's easy to look at it. I think, honestly, when you talk to experts about what life is like these days, particularly for parents, they have so little time compared to what it was like, you know, generations ago when there were multiple generations living in the house and everyone was able to help taking care of the kids. I know my wife and I, we struggle to get food cooked and ready throughout the week. And I think that is part of why a lot of these services are getting more and more popular.
When Jewel first started delivering groceries around here, a friend of mine looked at me like, are you crazy? But Brenda and I tried it a couple of times. It was a service that we thought was of sufficient value that we were willing to pay for it. And I guess that's it. If it's not worth it to you, don't do it. But if...
Exactly.
If enough
and
people...
I think what's,
go ahead.
I think what's surprising people is how many people do find it valuable.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, my only complaint is they never get bananas right. But everything else seems to work great.
Talk to me, Ian, about this is it guacamole? Am I reading this right, that Google is going to do?
Yes. Obviously, they're not going to come into your home and make avocado and salsa guacamole, but it's a name for one of their pieces of software. Basically, anyone who doesn't have an iPhone, there's a new feature they're working on. And what it is, if you have the beta version, so you know, if you're a developer, you're a super nerd, you already have this, but the rest of us are going to get it later this year. What it does is that it will actually allow you to tell the phone to stop an alarm or to answer a call without having to say, hey, and then say the name. I'm not going to set off everyone's devices.
Thank you.
And so it's actually really fascinating. You know, Google's trying to get to this point where we feel like we can have a conversation with these devices instead of, like, you know, snapping our fingers and telling it to listen to us. And I think that that is something that's interesting. I don't know how well it'll go or how people will respond to it, but it's definitely something I'm not surprised they're doing.
The latest iOS is 14.5. If I'm reading that correctly, I'm shocked because I think I'm on like 8. maybe not. I mean, because you lose some functionality with new apps, et cetera, if you don't continue to update your OS, right?
Correct. And generally speaking, Apple has made it so that it's automated for most people now. By default, most people get updated to the latest software. And one of the things that's always made Apple stand apart from the rest of the industry is that they release all their software at once for everybody. So all the phones, it's like 90% of their phones are on the latest software. And with this most recent one called iOS 14.5, which is like the most boring name you can imagine, what they included were some new emoji. Great, wonderful. I always enjoy new emoji. They also made it so that you can unlock your phone with your Apple Watch. So if you have one of those and you're outside and you have a mask on, you try to unlock your phone. Those of us who keep our grocery lists on our phones know how terrible that is. Now your phone will unlock with your watch, which is pretty nifty. And then the final thing they did is that they really went after Facebook. They decided to create a new privacy policy across all iPhones where if you open up Facebook or TikTok or any of these apps, it's going to ask you whether or not you are okay with the way that they track you across the internet for advertising. And you can say yes or no. And it's the first time anyone's done this, and it's freaking the tech industry out.
Hmm. I just opened up Spotify recently. I use it a lot for a program I use here, searching for music, and I don't like the new build. It looks to me like they've revamped their page and their functionality, and I hate it. And I wonder if that is a common phenomenon where an app you use or a site you go to now has a new system, and I didn't know they were going to do that. I want to go back to the old one, but you really can't do that, can you?
Correct. Actually, this is one of my funnest parts of the tech industry is when this happens. I remember when Facebook used to change their look dramatically. Like, the whole world would be like, why did you do this? I want the old one. So it's very common. And look, the reality is that we get used to the way things look. And a lot of us, we can use these apps without even looking at the screen, right? And then when they change it around, you get really frustrated. But I promise you, when we talk in a year or something, you'll be like, oh, whatever.
You'd better be right, because I'm not a happy camper right now, Ian. Ian Schur is the editor-at-large at CNET, CNET.com. Thank you, Ian.
Absolutely. Take care.
Jim Miller is the director of publicity and a racing analyst at Hawthorne Racecourse, HawthorneRacecourse.com. Kentucky Derby's coming up, and wagering has changed in Illinois, so this is timely. Jim, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's nice to run a derby again on the first Saturday in May.
Oh, that's right. We didn't do that last year.
That's right. Last year with COVID, everything was kind of changed a little bit. So the Derby was actually run in September of last year. So we're getting back to a little bit of normalcy this year, which is a nice thing. You're starting to see some capacity restrictions open up, which is also a good thing. It's not going to be a packed house at Churchill Downs by any means, but at least there'll be some fans in the stands.
Yeah, refresh my memory. So they bumped it into the fall, and then there was nobody there with the stands empty?
Right, exactly. Yeah, last year was a very quiet Kentucky Derby. It was horses on the racetrack, and that was just about it. So this year, they're back at about a 30, 40% capacity at Churchill Downs. So they are allowing some fans in. It won't be that 100,000 spectators that you normally see, but I would guess you're probably going to see about 30 or 40,000 people.
What's new at Hawthorne Racecourse these days?
I'll tell you, things are busy at Hawthorne. We're getting under construction for a casino, which is going to be just around the corner. Sports wagering is live in the state of Illinois, and that's going on at Hawthorne right now with our PointsBet Sportsbook. And then we're racing live, too. We just concluded our spring thoroughbred meet. Summer harness meet starts up on May 7th, and then we're open for the Derby. 10 OTBs open for the Derby, so it will be a very busy weekend.
What are you doing for capacity?
You know, for us, for capacity right now, we are limited. We're about 25% capacity right now. We do have the ability to put some tents in that outside, but we're really being very cautious. We're enforcing mask restrictions. We're taking temperatures when you come in the gate. We do want to allow some people in, but we do still want everybody to be very safe.
Are you going to try and rebrand Hawthorne, not just as a place to watch the races, but more as a wagering facility?
Yeah, and that really is the goal with Hawthorne, is you want to be able to incorporate everything into one location. And horse racing has always been the focus at Hawthorne. This is the 130th year of racing at Hawthorne Racecourse. So that does have to be the focus. But now, when you have gaming coming in, when you have sports wagering coming in, you really want to cross over those bettors, because some people may have been exposed to one but not the other. By doing this, we can really expose everybody to horse racing and improve the industry within the state of Illinois, but then also maybe bring that younger crowd that really likes the sports wagering in, bring some people that may be more of the casino gaming people in, and really incorporate it all into that one location.
So what's the facility going to look like? Is it like a Las Vegas thing? Is it like one of the river boats? What are you going to have set up?
It's going to be gorgeous. It's going to be absolutely gorgeous. You're talking a full-blown casino, so this isn't just electronic games. It is a full-blown gaming floor. When we talk about sportsbook, we want to set up like a Vegas-style sports wagering theater where you have lots of screens, the odds board in front of you, the ability to bet simulcasting for horses and that too. So we want to bring all of that in. We're going to have banquet rooms. We're going to have restaurants. And then, of course, right there on the finish line is going to be that focus on horse racing. So to be able to incorporate it all into one structure, it will be a one-of-a-kind facility in the state of Illinois, and that's what we're really excited about.
And you could bet on the Cubs, the Sox, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, et cetera, right?
You can bet on everything, yeah. Any sport here, the only thing we can't bet on right now is Illinois colleges. Hopefully that changes in the near future, but everything else you can wager on, we do it each and every day at Hawthorne, and we're only going to expand it.
We talked to the legislator that drafted that legislation, and he said one of the reasons that you can't bet on college athletes or games in Illinois was just to get the bill through. Even he thinks that that was a little short-sighted, in that given the era we're in right now, communications and stuff, it really doesn't make that much sense. If the goal were to protect the integrity of college sports, geographically banning it doesn't do that much. He actually thinks that they're going to eliminate that and you will be able to wager on college sports. Do you see that coming?
I do see it coming, and I see it coming very soon. And you really look at the opportunities, because there is so much of a focus on those college sports teams in Illinois. You look at Northwestern football playing for the Big Ten championship. Look at Loyola in Illinois in the NCAA tournament. And there is a lot of focus on these state schools that are doing big things really on major stages. So to be able to incorporate that interest and excitement into the wagering, it's only going to generate revenue for the state. And I do think that is coming just around the corner.
When does your casino open up?
You know what? Our casino construction is rolling right now. We're hoping that we're about, say, 14 months down the road, but everything, you know, it just kind of rolls with the weather, rolls with the punches, and we're going to be ready as soon as we can go.
So will it be the Hawthorne Casino, or do you have a partner?
Sure, we're going to stay with Hawthorne Racecourse. This has been Carey family-owned for over 100 years, and that's not going to change. We do have a partner for sports wagering with PointsBet, but Hawthorne Racecourse is the name that you're going to see on the side of the building.
We will broadcast the Kentucky Derby on WGN Radio this year, the Indy 500, too. Those are amazingly effective radio broadcasts, but I know you're going to have it on a screen there as well. Do you want to give me some tips on the Derby this year?
You know what? It's a very tough Derby, and the reason I say it's a very tough Derby is about five or six of your top contenders are not running in the race. So because of that, it's opened it up for a lot of horses, and there is a chance to get some value in this race. So for me, when you have 20 horses in a field, of course, people will like the favorite. I want to try to beat the favorite and get a little bit of value. So here's three horses you could look at. The first one is the one horse, a horse by the name of Known Agenda. This was the Florida Derby winner. This is a horse that sits back early and comes closing late. The one hole is not the most favorable position, though, in the Derby, but if that horse can work out a trip, that could be a threat. The other two horses that I really like here are the 15-horse Rock Your World. This is a horse that should show speed and should be in the mix the entire way around. And then I'm also going to look to a 30-to-1 long shot, the 18-horse Superstock. This was a horse that just won the $1 million Arkansas Derby, and I think that's a horse that could pull off a possible upset.
We talked to Sam Panionovich, who knows a thing or two about wagering in this state and others, a little while ago, and he likes Rock Your World, too, as a value bet in this race.
Yeah, and the thing about Rock Your World, this is a horse that's so lightly raced. The horse has only run three times on its career, and the first two races came on the turf course. Then they tried the horse on the dirt, and they last started out in the Santa Anita Derby. And this horse made the lead, not only took to the dirt, but really took to the dirt, because this horse was pulling away in the stretch. And the one thing that you find when you get 20 horses in a race, the best way to avoid traffic is to get in front of all of it. And that's the type of horse that Rock Your World is. This is a horse that should be out front early on and should be a factor the entire way.
Last thing, Jim. So when I go to Hawthorn, how do I do it? Like, should I plan on spending the day and having a meal? Say if I'm doing the Derby or any other day, what's the way you do it?
Here's the great thing about the Derby. We have so many options specifically with the Derby. We have bet and go wagering where you can walk right up, just go into our lobby, place your wagers, and then head on to your day and enjoy the race from home. We are taking reservations at Hawthorn if you do want to stay for the day and bet all of the racing action. And we're taking reservations at Hawthorn or at any of our Club Hawthorn OTBs, or a lot of our OTBs actually have drive-up wagering.
Yeah.
You can pull your car right on up, place those wagers, and then head on your way. So a lot of people do incorporate that. And then lastly, we do have a mobile app, too. It's at wager.clubhawthorn.com. You can sign up right there online and then just wager from the comfort of your home.
Nice to talk to you, Jim Miller, Director of Publicity. Can you tell? He's a racing analyst, too, and you can tell that. Hawthorn Racecourse, hawthornracecourse.com. Good luck, Jim. Congratulations. Sounds like great progress is being made out there.
Exciting things going on. Good luck to you on the Derby.
Thank you. Yeah, right. Well, I've got two people now saying Rock Your World. Maybe, well, I don't know, Wren's Place Show. You make your own bets. It's 12:45 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. As Americans emerge from the pandemic, they've been spending a lot of time under the golden arches. McDonald's first quarter sales surpassed even those in 2019, led by a big jump in U.S. demand. The company's revenue rose 9% for the January through March period. U.S. same-store sales rose 14%. McDonald's says new products, including a crispy chicken sandwich and spicy nuggets, helped draw in customers. McDonald's says its net income rose 39%. Three Chicago restaurants are first-time recipients of Michelin stars, while four restaurants have dropped off the list. Michelin awarded 2 stars to Ever and Moody Tongue Brewing. Porto has been awarded 1 star. Three other Chicago restaurants maintain 2-star designations. They are Smith, Oreo, and Acadia. Alinea remains Chicago's only restaurant with a 3-star rating from the Michelin Guide. 17 Chicago restaurants kept their 1-star ratings. The 4 restaurants to fall off the list have all closed: Band of Bohemia, Blackbird, Everest, and Kiko. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, thank you for that. Now the business of food on WGN. This is Steve Alexander.
Johnny, I sure hope Orion is not listening right now.
Okay.
Because we all know how he feels about non-dairy liquids being called milk.
Yeah, I do.
As the Big O often said, I've milked a lot of cows in my life, but I've never milked an almond or a nut or an oat. Still, fake milk is a multi-billion-dollar business. Oatly, a company which, as you would guess, makes oat milk, filed its IPO to go public, and its investors, like another Big O, Oprah, are likely to make a pile of money when that IPO drops. Oatly sells for about $10 a gallon. Almond milk is $10 to $12 a gallon. Kind of pricey. Or you can make your own. Let's try that again. Or you can make your own.
If you make fresh, non-dairy milk in our Milkmaid, that's an incredible savings, you know?
Megan Lynn is the product developer with My Chef Wave, which makes Milkmaid, a countertop appliance that looks a lot like a coffee maker. There's a photo on our website. Just search for the business of food.
You have a water tank in the back of the machine, and at the top of the machine, you have a compartment where you throw in all the ingredients. Let's say, for example, we're making almond milk today. Then you throw in 8 almonds, you close the lid, and you basically hit the almond milk program, and it does all the work for you. And it cleans itself after it's done.
Come on now. Only 8 almonds to make 20 ounces of milky substance?
I know. It sounds unbelievable.
Well, it does. There are other brands of these machines ranging up to $500. The Milkmaid by ChefWave retails for about $200. I haven't tried any of these machines, but if you and your family use a lot of that fake milk, maybe the math works for you. Just don't call it milk Orion will not be happy. Chicago Board Trade looks like a pause in the rally today. Beans are down about 10 and a half cents. Corn is unchanged right now. Wheat is trading up about 3 cents. Farmers and end users both wondering where the top is in this rally. Maybe we have found it. Today's Farm to Your Belly feature, and this is a tip of the hat to the shrimp farmers in Illinois. It is National Shrimp Scampi Day. Saute the garlic and the lemon and the butter and, oh boy, that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Let's talk about the overall economic picture today. And on the Wintrust Business Lunch, here again is Amy Guth. Hi, Amy.
Hi, John. How's it going today?
Good. Let's talk about some big picture numbers, the economy, the growth rate, the jobs numbers. What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Yeah, let's start with the economy, the growth rate. So the economy moved ahead the first 3 months of the year. We're looking at Q1. A lot of that is case numbers starting to come down, more people getting vaccinated, stimulus, things like that. So GDP, which really you can think about GDP, gross domestic product, as kind of the official scorecard for the economy. It rose at about 6.4% in the first quarter. Growth would have been stronger, though, if some of the supply bottlenecks that we've been seeing and shortages of key materials hadn't curbed production. When we're, you know, thinking about raw materials, precious metals, chip shortages that's impacting the automotive industry and some computer manufacturing and cell phones, things like that. What that's about really is that consumer spending surged 10.7% early in the new year. Part of that is stimulus checks. Part of that is some new job numbers. We saw some changes in employment benefits. In particular, 1.5 million new jobs. That also helped spending. Mostly people were spending on cars, home furnishings, recreational goods, home workout kind of things, clothing, and takeout food. We also saw business investment jump about 10%. And we saw some of the business investment going to new equipment and software there. Housing was also strong, up nearly 11%. So these are, you know, all signs of a strong recovery. A number that I thought was kind of interesting. We haven't had this strong of a quarter since about 1984. But we're still not at pre-pandemic levels. So when we're talking about this, we're just really looking at growth rate, not like the overall number. But economists feel like we would have been closer to 9% growth had some of those bottlenecks and chip shortages, things like that, not been in play. That was so impactful because we saw a lot of manufacturers couldn't keep inventory because demand was high because there were some, you know, materials missing in the supply chain, things like that. So positive signs, and that is expected to continue into the second quarter.
There's a saying, you can only beat the team you're playing, and I'm thinking about that when we compare our growth numbers now to what happened last year, because the team we are playing now was such a lousy team. 2020 was so terrible that you say, hooray, great growth numbers, but I don't know that it would be fair to compare it to 2019 because we can't be expected to suddenly compete at 2019 levels. So I'm trying to figure out what the most appropriate metric is, and maybe it is in fact 2020, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of considerations there. 2020 is hard to compare just because of everything that happened in 2020. There is seasonal adjustment. You know, we know that numbers are going to fluctuate at certain parts of the year. That's kind of been allowed for. I think really the thing to do here is to kind of play the long game, and you have to kind of take the long view and see what does this look like at the end of the year, how do things progress in the second quarter more immediately, and then how do things go in as we move into the third quarter? What will summer have done, and what happens when we move into the fall?
Well, U.S. News and World Report did a headline this way: jobless claims drop 13,000 to 553,000 as economy heals. That sounds like the long game. The economy
is
healing. That's all you can do. Let's talk a little bit about Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, I know. I know this is a very creative use of technology. So there is a town called Christiansburg, Virginia, And they are the testing ground for a commercial delivery drone. It's operated by Wing, which is a subsidiary of Google's parent company, Alphabet. And so people in Christiansburg who have ordered Girl Scout cookies, they're going to be delivered by drone. There's a lot of conversation in the tech sector and in delivery and logistics and shipping around the role of drones. Amazon has, you know, talked a lot about what this could mean if we could figure out drone delivery. So we're going to see how it goes with Girl Scout cookies. We've seen this with FedEx has kind of made a couple of tests here to do some like package delivery, things like that. But I think this is a, kind of a creative use, right? Girl Scout cookies don't necessarily, you know, it's not like hot food. It is, you know, pretty shelf stable. So you can deliver it and leave it at the door and it's not going to get cold and not work, right? Not be good enough to use. So I will be very curious to see the results of this Girl Scout cookie test and what that means for the future of delivery.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Well done. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.